I don't think there could have been a better song for this talk. Thank you. That's amazing. The universe just always knows. There's only one mind, and this is it. So before I start my talk, I want to give you all an extraordinary compliment. And I will cry while I do it. So I'm just giving you a heads up. So Karen and I were talking about, I think it was probably Thursday, about whether or not she thought she was going to, because Hugh was already in the hospital, whether or not she thought she'd be able to come and do the talk today. And she said, you know, when I'm at church, I'm grounded, I feel strength, I feel loved, and I feel supported. And that's on you. You know, you give her that here, and she gives it back to us. So until yesterday, because I said to her, I'll have a talk. If you show up on Sunday, you can do yours. If you don't, I'll do mine. But just know that from her perspective, the thought of being here would have been, had it been appropriate from a family perspective, would have been a loving, supportive experience. So thank you all for having that consciousness of love and kindness and caring and compassion. This is an extraordinary community, and I am so grateful to be a part. So thank you. And that said, I will say that there's a lot going on in the world right now, and a lot of it is challenging. And so I'm going to start and say, ultimately, this talk is going to be about kindness, compassion, caring. But we had yet another shooting this week. It's the 49th day of this year. Say that again. It's the 49th day of this year. We have hit 18 school shootings, and we have had 30 shootings outside when you combine schools, outside of the school. In our culture, we don't even hear about a lot of those anymore. And so I really believe that it is time for us to really step forward and stand in a position of unity and stand in a position of love and stand in a position of oneness. Because the only thing that can counteract the distress that's going on in our culture right now is more love. That love heals anything and everything. Everything is lifted in the presence of love. So it's important, now probably more important than ever before, that we stand together and see our common humanity. I think a part of what slipped away for some of us is the notion that we are indeed one. That nothing happens outside that doesn't touch me. So in Buddhism, there is something called rousing the bodhicitta. And at the beginning of every teaching, they do a practice of rousing the bodhicitta. And bodhicitta means the word itself, bodhi is wisdom or enlightenment, and citta is heart and mind. And so the process in a teaching is to stop, to open your heart and mind and extend the message that any message that you may get for yourself goes out into the world and touches the hearts of all mankind. So I will ask us to just take a moment and indeed arouse that bodhicitta in each of us and know that we dedicate this day to an expansion of our consciousness, an opening of our hearts, an opening of our minds. And as we do that, we touch every living soul. Thank you. So, like I said, now more than ever, I really believe that we really focus on the fact that we as individuals, we can impact the whole. I know that at times like this for me, there are times I think, what can I do? What can I do? There's a sense of helplessness sometimes until I step back, until I say, what we teach is oneness. What we teach is the connection to each other that is unbreakable. That there is nothing that can get in the way of that. And Ernest Holmes talked, has a lot. In fact, I love the glossary in the Science of Mind textbook. It's one of my favorite places. There's a lot of good stuff in the book, but if you just want to get a real little quick understanding, go to the glossary. It's amazing. Sorry. So, in the glossary, he defines race mind, which is the consciousness of the whole. He says, race mind is the subjective thought of the entire human race. And race suggestion, the collective of human beliefs operating through the mentality of the individual, the tendency to reproduce what the race has thought and experienced. This race suggestion is a prolific source of disease. These accumulated subjective tendencies of the human race are operative through any person who is receptive to them. And Thomas Troward talked about the law of averages. I talk about this a lot because it's so important to me. Because at times like this, I've had people say to me, so did these people create this? I don't believe that. But what I do believe is that the collective consciousness has a huge impact on everyone's life. And Troward talked about the law of averages. If we are not making conscious, awake, aware choices to lift our thoughts, to open our hearts, then we are simply at the mercy of the law of averages. X number of people will get divorced, X number of people will go bankrupt, X number of people will get married, X number of people will live happily ever after. I mean, it's like, it's the law of averages. And that I believe to the very depths of my being that we have the capacity to make a difference in that collective consciousness. I believe that each time we enter in to a space where we can sit in love and kindness and caring and compassion, it's like clean water that goes into a bucket. You know the old analogy where there's a bucket full of sand and dirt and you put a hose in and you start flushing it with clean water, and initially there's all kinds of mess because it gets all churned up and the water gets brown, and as it begins to overflow, the clean water washes away all of that sediment that sits in that bucket. I believe that each time we take a stand for unity, that we acknowledge that we are one, that we take a stand for love, for kindness, for caring, for compassion, that we make a difference in the world because we include those thoughts into that collective consciousness. Now, from my perspective, it doesn't mean that that's all we do, but that's a very profound and significant thing that we do. We can make a difference. In any moment, in any day, we can make a difference. So as we go forward, it's really a process of saying, what's mine to do? So I had the very, very good fortune last weekend of being at a retreat in Tucson with a woman named Kristen Neff, and she is a PhD at University of Texas, Austin, and her specialty is self-compassion. And Shauna Shapiro, who's a PhD and a therapist from University of Santa Clara, and they looked at the science of mindfulness and self-compassion. And I will tell you that there were some things that were said there that truly have impacted almost every moment of my day at some level. So they talked a lot about mindfulness, and mindfulness is one of those things that's just a real happy term. Everybody's using it. Even the doctors are using it. So when the doctors use it, you know that they're finally catching up with what the rest of us have been believing for a very long time. But mindfulness is defined as paying attention and training our awareness to see, to feel, to experience what's happening in the moment. Now that doesn't, and then here's the kicker. Here's the hard one. Without judgment. Yeah, uh-oh. Whoever said that, uh-oh. That's really true. So this is done without judgment. It's the ability to see what's happening while it's happening, but to do so from a space without assessing, simply seeing it. And being willing to see it for all that it is, the good, the bad, the ugly, the happy, the sad, the whole, just to see it all and to say, it is. And one of the things that Shauna Shapiro said was she was talking about the mind as it relates to some of this, and she said, sometimes I will just say, when my thoughts are going, thank you. And I don't have to believe you. And that's, you know, it's just like you thank them. You thank them for their opinion. She said, mostly, I just thank them for their opinion. And, you know, if you think about it, you've had relationships with people whose opinions don't necessarily line up with yours. And on a good day, if you're me, only on a good day, on a good day if you're me, you can say, everyone is entitled to their opinion. And I can just bless them and allow them to have it. Other days, I'm not so good at that, but ultimately, that's the goal. To be able to say, that's their opinion, I don't have to believe it, and they can believe it. It's up to them. It's like Terry Cole Whitaker's title of her book from long ago and far away, What You Think of Me Is None of My Business. That is a part of being able to just say, I can let you be who you are, I can be who I am, and the key is to not judge. So it's training the mind to stabilize so that we can see clearly. And they use the analogy of a camera. So if a camera's jiggling, and if you've ever seen any pictures I've taken, especially on my phone, and most of them are blurry, most of them are fuzzy. At one point, someone said to me, are you getting Parkinson's or something? Every single picture you take is like, I said, no, I don't think so. My phone is smarter than I am. Anyway, so this process of training our mind so that we can see clearly. And when they break down the word mindfulness, it's heartfulness, awakened heart. And then Brené Brown is very funny. She does a lot of work with Kristen Neff. And she said, can we just call it courageous presence? And I thought, well, that's pretty good, too, because it is, you have to be courageous to look at something without biting the hook of judgment, to be able to step back and to see it objectively. So they talked a lot about your intention. And Jon Kabat-Zinn, who is the person who created mindfulness-based stress reduction, this is a quote that has stuck with me since it came out of their mouth. Jon Kabat-Zinn says, intentions set the compass of our heart. I think that's just exquisite. So Shauna talked about the whole process of looking at mindfulness with kind attention, with kind awareness. And she told a story about at 19, she had something happen and she had fusion, big rods in her back, and she was in pain all the time. And she sought out meditation as a potential source. And somehow she ended up, and she didn't say, it's probably a long story, in Thailand at a meditation retreat. Now that's pretty brave. If you're gonna go to your first meditation retreat, you're gonna go to a monastery in Thailand. But that's what she did. And she said, the monks didn't speak English and she didn't speak Thai. So the only thing she really got clearly about meditation was following the breath in and following the breath out. She said, so it's like 4 hours a day, and then a little lunch, and then 4 hours more, and a little dinner, and 4 hours more, and a little sleep. And what was it? Wash, rinse, repeat. So she said that she would follow her breath, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. Mind was gone, as it is, our minds are designed to wander. And so she would try that again, you know, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, and it's gone. And she got so frustrated. And then the inner critic takes over, right? Well, who do you think you are being at a meditation retreat in Thailand? You can't do this. And just all kinds of self-judgment. And then she said after a couple of days, it was, what is wrong with these people? I mean, why would they be sitting here doing nothing but this all day long? So finally, she said, after several days, a monk from England came and he spoke English. But this is a silent retreat now, so you have to ask permission of the big kahuna, whatever you call the top monk guy. And she had to ask for an audience with this monk from the UK so that she could actually speak to him. And so when he got there, because she'd been silent for a while, she said it was just like, blah, 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 blah. Everything she was thinking, everything was wrong with her. Blah, blah. And he went, oh my dear, you aren't meditating. You're growing judgment, anger, frustration. You're practicing frustration, anger, judgment, fear, separation. That's what you're practicing. You're not practicing meditation. You're practicing all those things. And what you practice, as we know, grows stronger. And that's what he told her. So you have to look at, what are you practicing? Are you practicing anger? Are you practicing judgment? Are you practicing fear? Are you practicing kindness, compassion, love, understanding? But where we put our focus, that's what we're practicing. And so I can't tell you how many times I have, in the middle of that retreat, another one of those phrases that has been then kind of my constant companion: what you practice grows stronger. What are you growing right now in this moment? What are you growing right now in this moment? And more importantly, what do you want to grow? Because even if I'm growing frustration or fear or anger or sadness, I can in any moment, that is the extraordinary thing that we teach in this philosophy. We teach choice, and we teach choice in every single solitary moment. That each moment we have the opportunity to choose again. And so that practice, what am I growing now? What do I want to grow? What am I practicing now? And that is really enlightening. And it's a tremendous, for me, I found it to be a tremendous way to shut the monkey mind up. It's like, oh, I'm practicing judgment. Is that what I want to grow? How else could I see this? You know, Marianne Williamson, and I say this often too, one of her most commonly used prayers is, Lord, help me to see this differently. So that's, for me, a really, really important key for me to be able to see a sense of kindness, a sense of oneness, a sense of unity. Because kindness is so very important. And she talks about, in fact, all of people who talk about mindfulness will talk about setting an intention, and then you pay attention. And because our minds are our minds, it goes away. And then you're curious once you realize it, and you bring it back. Then you make a new choice. But they both said, notice the tone of voice when you bring yourself back. If you've been in that space where you're growing judgment, or growing fear, or growing anxiety, when you bring yourself back, is it, snap out of it? Or is it kind and caring and compassion? Or is it to your thoughts, thank you for your opinion, and choose again? So that curious, kind awareness, that kind attention, it gives, when we have kind attention, it gives us the courage to look at things differently, right? Because if you think about it, if you've been in a position where people are judging you, they're demanding, they want you to do this and not that, and courage leaves the building, right? You just want to make it go away. You want to figure out what you can do to make it stop. But with kind awareness and kind attention, it gives you the courage to look. And it gives you the opportunity to consider that indeed we do dwell in the world of infinite possibilities. And that in those infinite possibilities, we can always make a new choice. We can look at what we've chosen. Ernest Holmes says, look the discordant fact in the face before you turn to the truth. It doesn't mean that we don't turn to the truth. And he also says that just because something is happening now doesn't mean it's permanent. It doesn't mean it has control over us. It's just what we're experiencing in this moment, and we can choose again. And so for me, that's an extraordinary freedom. And when I add to that discussions about being friendly with ourselves, that's a really interesting discussion in my head, because I'm not necessarily friendly with myself. So in the portion where we're talking about compassion and self-compassion, excuse me, they look at mindfulness, which is, it allows us to be with our feelings and without judgment. And it allows us to hold whatever arises with loving, kind compassion. So whatever arises, and I don't know about you, but when you've been in times of difficulties, all kinds of things arise. Sometimes it's love, sometimes it's kindness, sometimes it's caring, compassion. Sometimes it's a whole lot of things that aren't that. But that mindfulness allows whatever is there to arise without judgment. And compassion then is something that happens in response to a difficulty. Mindfulness is just that container. And compassion allows us to respond. Kristen Neff says, every moment of suffering is an opportunity for connection. And that's easy for me to say and see if you're the person who's suffering and I'm with you. It's not so easy to say for me. So that's the whole process of learning to expand our hearts and our minds. Pema Chodron's definition of compassion is one I use a lot. Compassion is not a relationship between the healer and the wounded. It is a relationship between equals. Only when we know our own darkness can we be present with the darkness of others. Compassion becomes real when we recognize our shared humanity. And for me, that's frightening sometimes, but important, because what happens when we're with somebody who's in pain? Most of us, it hurts, you know, we feel that pain, and then we want to fix it, right? We want to fix it. What can I do to make it better? What can I say? What can I give you? Fix it quick, because we are a culture that really does not like to feel our feelings. We eat at them, we drink at them, we drug at them, we shop at them. Feeling unpleasant emotions is something that we will do at almost any cost to avoid. So being mindfully aware to notice that suffering's going on and to let kindness arise without the need to fix so that we can see we're not alone. And if you think about times when you've been in distress, and a lot of us, I think, have a tendency to think we're all alone in that. And having someone say, this is what happened to me, isn't necessarily the same as just saying, I love you, right there in that pain. Right there, I can just be kind to you, I can be compassionate, I can be loving, and I can ask you, what would you want? Because when I'm in fix-it mode, it's scary. Because I'm trying to figure out a way, something to give you that will, here, this will make it better, won't it? Here, let me give you, do this. And it's like, sometimes you're going, no. While I appreciate that, it is, you know, it's like, for me, sometimes it's the only thing you can do is just say, I love you, I'm here, and leave me alone. Other times, it's to say, just come over and you can hang out, read, whatever. But I'm just going to be there with you if you need anything. So that process of really then being able to turn that same thing to ourselves, self-compassion is defined very loosely as treating yourself in the way you would treat someone else that you care about deeply. We don't do that so well a lot of the times. So the actual attributes of self-compassion are self-kindness, common humanity, and mindfulness. And Kristen Neff made a really fascinating statement. She said, a lot of self-compassion is that kind, soothing, caring, understanding, soft yin. And she called it the yin experience of self-compassion. But there's also a yang experience. And that is when you become protective and say, no, you can't treat me this way. No, this is not okay with me. And if you have compassion for other people, sometimes it's also with their permission to be their advocate to say no. So it's a process of really saying, as I look at all of that, what, again, do I want to grow? What do I want to grow? Ernest Holmes says, we have no understanding of divine compassion unless we ourselves first exercise compassion. The very judgment by which we judge others becomes a self-judgment. I don't like that. I want you to know, folks. I don't. Sometimes I read that and go. But the very judgment by which we judge others becomes a self-judgment. It is as if the law of life were giving back to each one of us exactly what we have projected into it, as though everything that goes out from us must come, everything that goes out from us must again return by a law of action and reaction. and it's from a little book called Help for Today. And I love Kindle because it bundles a lot of those little books together. So I have read, you know, with getting those in bundles, things that I didn't even know were in print. So there's a nursing scholar named Teresa Wiseman whose specialty is empathy, and there's a difference between empathy and compassion. But with empathy, she gives the characteristics of perspective taking, seeing and accepting the perspectives of others as their truth. I don't have to agree with it, right? But being able to just say that is who they are, that is what they believe, that is their truth. And then staying out of judgment, again, that nasty, all those wisdom teachings people, they just love staying out of judgment. It's so hard. So staying out of judgment. And actually our brains are really hardwired to judge it. And so that's just a part of it as well. But then being able to communicate that you recognize their emotion. And that doesn't, it's not fixing, it's just knowing that someone's frightened and to be able to say, I love you. It must be really scary here. Or really frustrating, or whatever it may be. And then mindfulness. So what do we do? What do we do with all of this? There's a study called the Good Samaritan Study, and it was at a school of theology, and I would have to go home and dig out all my notes. I couldn't find it last night. But the Good Samaritan Study was with a whole bunch of ministerial students. A very traditional, like it was like a Baptist school of theology. And they were given an assignment to write their best sermon about the Good Samaritan. And they were going to give that, each of them would have the opportunity to give that sermon. They were split into a couple of groups. And some of them were told, oh, we've moved the location, it's way on the other side of campus. There will be no waiting. There'll be no exceptions. You have to get over there, and you have to get over there fast. And so they went charging across the campus, and they had someone that, from a study perspective, they called the Confederate, who fell down in front of them as they were coming and said, I'm hurt. I'm hurt. Can you help me? Please stop. Help me. And the people who were just infected with that fear said, I can call somebody for you, but no, they're gone. Now, the second group were told, you know what? It's been moved, but don't worry. We're not going to start till y'all get there. So just take a breath, relax, work your way over there. It'll all be okay. Same Confederate goes down, and almost to a person, they all stop to help. So from my perspective, it becomes a question of, can I really stop? Because stopping is a big part of what happens, I think, for me to expand my heart. We are so fast, so busy, so much is going on in the world that I can tell you there are times when I come home from work at night and I have to think, did I even go down the hall to the ladies' room today? I'm not sure. Focus. Fast, 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 no breaks, go, go, go. That's the nature of our culture. So slowing down and taking a breath and saying, the world will go on no matter what. So one of the questions that I ask myself often is, how would I be different if I perceived things through first, a lens of kindness, of caring, of compassion, of understanding. If I let kindness lead the way, how would my words be different? How would my thoughts be different? How would my actions be different? And that goes back to, what are you practicing and what do you want to grow? So Joel Goldsmith says, in Practicing the Presence, he quotes Matthew, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. And he says, let us understand that anything of which we can become aware of is a neighbor. Isn't that interesting? First time I read that, I went, I only thought of it as people. Anything that I can be aware of can become a neighbor. whether it appears as a person, a place, or a thing, every idea in consciousness is our neighbor. So how do you treat yourself? When I think love your neighbor as yourself, sometimes we are treating our neighbors as we treat ourselves. And that's why self-compassion, I believe, is important. Because we can't give to somebody else what we don't have. Kindness is so important because we can't give to somebody else what we don't have. There's a man named Eric Hoffer, who was a modern American moral and social philosopher, who in 1983 won the Medal of Freedom. And he says, the remarkable thing is that we really love our neighbors as ourselves. We do unto others as we do unto ourselves. We hate others when we hate ourselves. We're tolerant toward others when we tolerate ourselves. We forgive others when we forgive ourselves. The capacity for getting along with our neighbor is to a large extent determined by the capacity for getting along with others. The self-respecting individual will try to be as tolerant of his neighbor's shortcomings as he is of his own. And for me, that's a part of common humanity. That's a part of being able to say, what am I willing to grow? What do I want to grow today? And what am I willing to put out into that collective consciousness of the world? Not only what am I growing for myself, but what am I growing collectively? Ernest Holmes, in some of his early writings, there's a whole collection of lessons. And it's before, I think, they probably started a lot of formal teaching, because it's a book from the 40s, I think. And he calls it a misuse of the law of freedom. The problem of evil will be met only to the degree that we cease doing evil and do good. For evil will disappear when we no longer indulge in it. When the whole world sees the right and does it, then and not until then will the problem of evil be solved in the entire race. And evil, you know, is a very biblical term, and it makes some people go, I was one for a long time. But it's a function of saying, it's like sin. Sin is missing the mark. It's an erroneous way of thinking. It's a way of judging and making myself and others wrong. So it's really on us to begin to practice peace, to begin to practice kindness, to begin to practice love. And many of us, you know, we're already doing that. It's not like we're all running around slapping each other upside the head doing mean, nasty things. I think that if you're drawn to this philosophy, that you are at the very core of your being someone who desires to be as loving and kind and caring and compassionate as possible, because we acknowledge that as the truth of who we are. And that everything else is just forgetting the truth of who we are. So it's it's on us to begin to really stop and say, what do I want to grow? What do I want to grow? The definition of responsibility says that it's that within one's own power, control, or management. Responsibility, that which I can control, I have power that I can manage. So what do we have control over? Us. I have only control over me. My husband will tell you, he's here today, that there are times that I think I have control over him. But I don't. There are times he thinks he has control over me. But he doesn't. I'm the only one that can make a choice for me. The only one. And meaning is something that we decide as well. We can sometimes accept a collective agreement about what something means, but we have to accept it. We're the ones that assign meaning. And so it's a question to say, what am I willing to believe today? And if I have a meaning that's less than kind, if I have a meaning in that race mind of judgment, can I be willing to step back and see this differently? Lord, help me to see this differently. Lord, help me to see this differently. And I think that if we could do that, truly the world would be a completely different place. One of the things that they know, and I have no idea how they figured this out, but they say that we think between 50,000 and 70,000 thoughts a day. How do they figure that out, right? Could I keep track of every thought I think? I don't think so. I'm sorry. Bad Sue. And our mind wanders at least 47% of the time. Right? 47% of the time. So it's a process of saying, can I be kind to myself and say, my mind wanders 47% of the time. So, hello, you've wandered, come back. It's okay. Rather than that tone of voice that sometimes says, and being able to say, I remember now that kindness is contagious, that love is contagious, that peace is contagious, that happiness is contagious. We already know that fear is contagious. I heard a speaker one day saying, really, to some extent, our culture has become so focused on fear that we wake up and say, what do I have to be afraid of today? Right? It's contagious. So it's on us, ladies and gentlemen, it's on us to have the contagion of joy, the contagion of happiness, the contagion of love, of peace, of kindness, of softness. You know, when I think sometimes if there was a word, just one word that I could say, if I could just be that, if I could just jump into this, life would be completely different. And for me, it's softness. Softness. Could I see the world through a softer lens where it's not quite so rigid? And for me, when I think about the contagion, when I think about what I'm growing, when I think about the fact that we can change at any given moment, what do you want to grow? What do you want to grow? And that has allowed me, my job is always a little crazy, but it's a little crazier than usual right now. And it has allowed me to get to that point where I recognize faster. When I say, what am I growing right now? What am I practicing right now? And it's a really fast way to break that crazy. And sometimes, truthfully, I say, bad. You know, I'm thinking grumpy. That's what I'm growing, grumpy. But when I acknowledge it and I cannot judge myself for it, it's a lot easier than to say, you know what, I don't like these grumpy pants and I'm taking them off. So Pema Chodron also says it's time for us to shift our allegiance. She says at some point we need to stop identifying with our weakness and shift our allegiance to our basic goodness. It is highly beneficial to understand that our limitations are not absolute or monolithic, but relative and removable. Relative and removable. Can I open my heart enough to let that be true? Can I be kind enough to say yes? Jewel, who is one of my favorite singers, has an exquisite song called Satisfied. And it says, she talks about being with other people. Did you say it? Did you mean it? Did you lay it on the line? Did you make it count? Did you look them in the eye and did they feel it? Did you say it in time? Did you say it out loud? It says, busy people are walking by, can't help but worry some with so many things to do, so little love gets done. Empty hearts everywhere, drowning but dying of thirst. If we want love, it's not that hard. We start by giving it first. And it goes on, and this is the part that, when I look at what's going on in the world, she says, horses are built to run. The sun is meant to shine above. Flowers are made to bloom. And then there's us. We were born to love. And that is completely in alignment with what we teach. Love is at the core of who we are. And the other song that she has that I, right now, if you were to get in my car, you'll hear three songs: Satisfied, Life Uncommon, and one by Celtic women called Awakening. And I get a little autistic and AD, just like I just play the same thing over and over and over, which is why it's good that I'm in my car alone. But Life Uncommon, she says that we need to lend our voices to only to sounds of freedom. No longer lend your strength to that which you wish to be free from. Fill your lives with love and bravery, and we shall lead a life uncommon. And then she says, there are plenty of people who pray for peace, but if praying were enough, it would have come to be. So let your words enslave no one. The heavens will hush themselves to hear. Our voices ring out clear with sounds of freedom. So lend our voices only to sound of freedom. No longer lend our strength to that which we wish to be free from. Fill your lives with love and bravery, and we shall lead a life uncommon. And I think if we all spent some time trying to say, can we lend our voices to sounds of freedom, to sounds of love, to sounds of kindness, caring, and compassion? And the times when we don't, to be very kind to yourself and just simply say to your thoughts, thank you for your opinion, and bring it back. What do I want to grow? What am I practicing? What do I want to grow? So thank you, everyone. I would like to just anchor some of this in prayer and say right here, right now, in the presence and the activity of that spirit, which is indeed pure love, pure joy, peace, harmony, abundance, health, well-being. It is all that God is and more. And that if it is a quality of the divine, of the universe, of that incredible spirit, it is true for us. It is true for everyone, everywhere, regardless of appearance, regardless of choice. It is true. It is unshakable. It is indeed the essence of who we all are. And so here in this moment, I open my heart and my mind, my soul and my spirit, and step into that field of infinite possibility in ways that I may have never known before this day. And I know that each and every person here has that capacity to step into, consciously, into that field of infinite possibilities with me, to join in peace, in love, in kindness, in compassion, in understanding, in wisdom. And that each time we do this together, when two or more are gathered together, it is always more powerful. And we have come here together to stand in this truth, to incorporate our absolute knowing that love is the answer, that kindness is the answer. And that as we stand together here in this space, we make a difference. We make a difference in our lives. We make a difference in the lives of those around us. Indeed, we make a difference in the world, for we are born to love. That is our essence. And as we go forward from this day, from this moment, knowing that we have a choice in every moment to determine what we grow, to determine what we practice, to determine where we stand in the field of infinite possibility. And in this moment, we say yes to kindness, to caring, to compassion, to love, to the oneness that we see in each of us as we look in each other's eyes. We are more alike than we are different. And here in this moment, our alikeness comes to the surface. I give thanks for this philosophy that teaches us that very thing, that we are one, that we have choice, that we are indeed born to love, that we are made of love and kindness and caring. And our only job this day is to remember that. It is to remember that and to step into it more fully and allow the contagion of love to spread across this land, to spread across the world, to touch the hearts of people who have been dwelling in the contagion of fear, which causes judgment and harsh action. That our love goes out into the world and makes a difference. I give thanks for each person here with their open hearts, their open minds, with the willingness to take a stand, to grow oneness and kindness and love. So I know that as we go forward this week, we do so with the sense of, with a sense of joy, knowing that this choice that we have is indeed the ground of freedom, and that we choose to be free. I release this with such joy, with such gratitude, because I know that the universe always says yes, always. And so with a sense of excitement, with a sense of enthusiasm and an expectancy of good, good and more good, I joyfully release this out into the law and to the synchronicity with love, knowing that yes is the answer. And so it is.